to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Jordan Calhoun, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we are learning how to create healthy boundaries.
We are, and we're doing so with help from therapist Nedra Glover Tawab.
And just noticing what you're feeling. So whether that's you're angry, you're upset, you're frustrated, you say something like, why would they do? All of those things could be the potential for a new boundary.
Nedra is a licensed therapist and relationship expert, and now a New York Times bestselling author. Her book is called Set Boundaries, Find Peace, A Guide to Reclaiming Yourself. And she joined us to talk about how to establish better boundaries for ourselves.
Alice, you and I talked about this before, but I'd love to hear again, where do you stand on setting boundaries? How does it make you feel when you're setting boundaries for other people? Are you able to do it effectively?
I mean, I am like a little baby boundary setter. I've started only in the past, few years to really even understand that I didn't have a great set of boundaries and how to kind of establish those. And I've rocketed from being like too permeable and letting everything in to being way too harsh and cutting people out of my life completely and, you know, just being way too strict and sort of, and now I'm kind of settling somewhere in the middle and figuring out how to do it. It's such a balance.
Do you find it to be that way for everyone, or is it like specific people in your life who you have trouble with boundaries?
I mean, I think it's my family that I really struggle with, you know, let people get away with too much. The resentment builds up. And then I'm like, you're dead to me. And they're confused. They're confused and frightened. And then I have to kind of like rein it back in and be like, okay, I can't really do that. So boundaries to me, it's been an ongoing struggle, but I do feel like I'm making some progress. How about you, Jordan? I feel like you're much better at this than I am.
I mean, I don't know if better is the right word. I feel like I'm on the other side of the seesaw where I just go straight to the, I mean, not you're dead to me, but like I generally speaking am so concerned with being taken advantage of that I am ultra vigilant against being taken advantage of or people setting expectations for me that I feel are unfair or, you know, someone sort of overstepping and scamming me in some way or using me in some way. So if someone does that type of thing, I try to call it out as quickly as possible to basically be like, this doesn't fly. Like I remember just, I guess, having heard this a long time ago when I was a kid and it stuck in my head that people treat you the way that you let them treat you. And ever since I was a kid, you know, anytime that I would be bullied or be taken advantage of, I would basically try to, once I got old enough, I got to the point and the confidence level that I would try to nip it in the bud as soon as possible because I know what it's like to be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And it sort of drives me crazy to the point of being too harsh, I think. So I think that there's sort of a level of give that I need to find, and you and I can meet in the middle where we're setting boundaries where it's appropriate and we're also being flexible where it's appropriate, right?
Right. We're going to find that happy medium somehow.
Well, we're going to find out from Nedra. But before we dive in and talk about that,
I think you have
some news to share with the people, right?
I do. This is my last episode of The Upgrade. I am leaving Lifehacker. I'm leaving you, Jordan. I'm sorry.
Alice, when I heard this, I just laid on the ground on my rug and stared at the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the sound of silence played in the background. It was just me laying down and it was just, hello, darkness, you were like, hello, my darkness, old friend. Mm-hmm. That's what it was like. For about six hours. And it took a while for me to come to terms with it. I'm still not there.
That was weird because it was the beginning of the day. And I was like, Jordan, we have work we need
Jordan,
to do.
Jordan, we have to do things.
You
I'm like,
need
no.
to recover.
this is my time. You need to give me this time. And now our listeners are probably experiencing it. Dear listeners, I can relate. I know how you feel.
Well, I'm going to miss you guys, but I have no doubt that The Upgrade will continue without me. Somehow you will muddle through.
Absolutely devastated, but we will press on. Will it be better? I don't know if anything can be better sans Alice, but I will do everything that I can. So that's, you know, we're going to pave ourselves to a new future. And we'll see how everything goes without you.
Think positive.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing my best. Okay. But we'll give you a chance to give a more official goodbye at the end of the show to all of our listeners who love you. In the meantime, we shouldn't dawdle anymore before we dive in and talk about boundaries with Nedra. So let's hop in.
Great. Nedra, welcome to The Upgrade.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, before we begin, when we talk about boundaries, what are we talking about?
We are talking about relationships and how we can exist in them in a healthy way.
And what does healthy boundaries look like? What do unhealthy boundaries look like?
Healthy boundaries look like clearly stated or exercised behaviors. Unhealthy boundaries look like building walls to keep people out or not telling people what you need and assuming that they will know.
So I imagine if you have these unhealthy boundaries, like many of us do for particular people in our lives, can you describe what it feels like to go from having unhealthy boundaries with people and what that could do for you and what that could do for your relationship if you make that transition to having healthy boundaries? I imagine what most people worry about is that they'll just be ridden with guilt for, you know, or feel like they're letting someone down for establishing those boundaries. What does it feel like to make that transition?
Well, it's not always letting someone down as much as it might be bringing them closer. Because sometimes when we have unhealthy boundaries, we start to avoid people. We start to put them in this space of, I don't want this person around, not answering their phone calls and those sorts of things. When we start to implement boundaries, we may start to see some changes in their behavior in the relationship, and we're more open to being more connected to them. So it's not always this awkwardness. It can be a situation where they come closer together.
You talk in the book about your own struggles with boundaries and how changing that changed your life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my biggest issue with boundaries was dealing with the pushback. I didn't feel necessarily bad for setting them, and I thought they were okay. But when people expressed not liking it or questioning it or pushing back, I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't have the boundary. And so I questioned my behaviors a lot until I found like, oh, you know, like having a standard in your relationships is actually healthy. It's not me necessarily, it's them. And also I had to learn how to execute boundaries because I would allow things to go on for way too long. And by the time I said something, it was aggressive, right? And so it's like the yelling of the boundary. And they're like, when did I do it the first time? You're like, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I had to learn how to say things in the moment, how to notice when I'm irritated by something and expressing it then and not waiting until I'm absolutely upset about something and done with the relationship, but using boundaries as a preservation strategy.
What if you're on the other end of the spectrum? I worry that I have too rigid of boundaries. Me and Alice joke about this a lot. Like we're on opposite ends of the spectrum here. Can you have too rigid boundaries and how could you fix that?
Absolutely. I think with rigid boundaries, sometimes you have all of these rules, like I don't do this with people. I only do this. People can't do this to me. Things are like, and it keeps you safe, you think, but it also keeps you in a bubble and people away from you. And it is quite healthy to have different boundaries for different people because maybe some people don't even need the same boundaries, or maybe you want to be more flexible with this boundary. But if you have these hard rules of never saying yes to certain things or never trying certain things, it may be very hard to be open to new experiences or even finding out things that could bring you pleasure in relationships that you didn't even think about.
So what does this look like on a practical level? Like if I'm trying to create better boundaries for myself, how do I go about doing that? Do you envision a boundary? Do you practice? Do you rehearse? How do you do that?
Well, the rehearsal can can be helpful, but I often caution people against it, because when we talk too much about stuff and overthink it, we can easily talk ourselves out of it, because not only are we rehearsing our side, we're rehearsing the other person's side. And we tend to think in the worst case scenario, like, and then they're going to say, and we have like these, all these mean emojis, and it's like, I don't know if that'll happen. So the rehearsal, yeah, it could be helpful for you getting your words out, but it could also be very damaging in that you're thinking of this way that someone else could potentially respond that's not true. And so I think the easiest thing to think about is to really focus on the solution and not the problem. Sometimes when we're talking about boundaries with people, we have this, you know, like this 4-page letter of stuff. And in fourth grade, you did this. And in second grade, you did this. And the first time we met, this is what I didn't like. And really, you want to focus on the present. You want to tell them what you need, what you want, what you expect, what you desire. They don't need the story portion of it just yet. So before you come over, please give me a call. You don't need to give them the whole story of, you know, 2 weeks ago, you just dropped by. I wasn't all of that stuff. That just makes it harder. And it makes you really want to practice, because now you have all this stuff to say. And really what you want is this one thing, which is please call before you stop by.
I imagine it's based on the individual, like you had mentioned earlier, but do you generally recommend explaining your boundaries to people when you're setting them, or should you set the boundary and let that stand firm on its own?
It depends how secure you are in setting boundaries. If you are a newbie, I would say please don't explain yourself, because they will likely talk you out of your boundary. If you are very practiced, you could probably say something and then give an explanation. When you're uncomfortable setting boundaries, people can say about 2 or 3 things and you're like, okay, maybe my boundary is silly.
You were right. Yeah, that was my fault. What was I thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't want to give too much explanation when you're new, because you may lack the confidence to really stand in the thing you're saying. So if you are practiced and you feel comfortable doing this, then yes, you can give, again, a small explanation. Don't give too much, because you don't want people to have space to challenge what might be safe for you.
I think part of the practice is even recognizing when your own boundaries have been violated. And mm-hmm. if you're new to this, you may not even be aware of it. You might just feel kind of vaguely resentful. How do you become more aware?
I think vague resentment is a wonderful place to start, because that is a feeling, like you feel something, and just noticing what you're feeling. So whether that's you're angry, you're upset, you're frustrated, you say something like, why would they do? All of those things could be the potential for a new boundary. Don't let those things slide and give them another opportunity. It sounds like there is something that you prefer instead of what has happened. So discover what that thing is. And again, that one sentence communication. You know, the other day you caught me and I was in a grocery store and you started unloading. So, you know, it would be really helpful if you asked me something like, are you prepared to talk right now? That way I can make sure I'm in the right space to talk to you about really deep issues.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Where do our boundary problems begin in the first place? Is there a certain age range or a certain relationship, you know, with our parents or siblings or something like that, where we're learning this skill primarily? Or is it something, I doubt it's something that's just innate in us.
Well, I'm a therapist, and you know what all therapists say, right?
I mean, it's going to be the mom, right? It's gonna, yeah. Just blame the mom. That's what I do with my problems.
Yeah, you're the reason I can't drive, mom.
Yep.
You know, I'm 40, but yeah. So I'm not going to say it's parents. I think it's just adults in general who shape us. They kind of teach us how to or not have boundaries. And it starts by, you know, adults telling us this isn't nice to say. You can't do this. You can't do that. You're not a fool. Eat some more. All of these things that teach you to bypass what you're actually feeling within your body. Teaching you to bypass your intuition of what feels right and wrong. You know, being forced to hug someone when you're really like, no, I'm actually uncomfortable. I don't want my aunt to kiss me on the face. You know, like all of these things where kids are put in these situations. And now we have adults where it's like, well, how could I tell someone not to kiss me on the face? It's like, because it feels gross to you. And it makes you feel uncomfortable. So is it okay to say, you know, I prefer hugs instead of like kisses? Or can we, you know, shake hands instead of hugging? Or, you know, let's do an arm bump. We're in COVID, you know, like elbows. It's okay to say these things. But I think in childhood, not just your parents, we're not going to blame everything on the parents, but adults in general are really shaping that perspective of, this is how a child should be obedient and behave. And some of those very natural instincts are really shut down because it doesn't work for the environment or the people in it.
You talk in the book about doing this with your own daughter and how you recognized that she was uncomfortable around a certain person. So you made sure she didn't have to be around that person. Or, you know, if your child doesn't want to necessarily be kissed, you can express that to your family members in a way that respects the child's boundaries.
Yes. So we were, when she was a infant almost, I was, you know, going to the gym after I had her, and she was, you know, a pretty nice baby. She'd go to, you know, most people, but it was this one person in particular. It'd be about 15 minutes and they'd come get me out the class. She's crying. And so she did this a few times and I said, this is so weird because everyone else, like, she's fine for the hour that I'm in this class. And I tried to talk to the lady. She's like, I don't know what it is. All the kids love me. And I said, well, my daughter doesn't. She's like, I don't know what it is. And so I started to call the gym before I would go. And I would say, hey, is so-and-so there? And I would kind of cater my workout around this person not being in the childcare because my daughter didn't like her. I don't know why. It could have been a perfume, could have been, you know, a strong cuddle. I don't know. But I just knew that her behavior was different with this person. And she's a baby. She can't articulate what's happening, but I trusted that she felt something because it was out of character for her.
And how old was she, just out of curiosity?
Maybe about three or four months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it really can start that young, that you're really honoring their boundaries. That's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Alice, like she literally would, you know, hey, Alice wants to hold you. And she'd just sit there and she'd be cool. So if she was crying, I'm like, what's going on here? You know, and not forcing a person into that situation because there's no reason that I can't take you at this time. Or there's no reason that we can't modify this in some way where you feel safe and comfortable.
I'm thinking of the type of situation now where you make a commitment, you have some type of obligation that you said yes to, you agreed to, and then you resent it afterwards.
Mm.
Is that the type of problem that you have to mitigate on the front end, like not putting yourself in that situation? Or are there things that you could do? Is it okay to change that commitment after the fact? Because now, you know, after you agree to this thing, you resent it and you don't want to do it anymore. And you can establish that boundary later on. And I'm thinking about this specifically in the context of a personal thing a situation that I've set myself up in, and I imagine a lot of people have as well, is that I've told no fewer than a million people during this pandemic that, like, once it's over, that I would visit them or I would see them, or, you know, you make all these plans for what you would do when the world opens back up. There's no way I'm going to make good on those. Like, there's no way that I'm going to visit the number of people who I promised to visit or follow through on the number of plans that I promised that I would follow through with. What does someone do in that situation when you start to feel anxious about promises that you made that you can no longer keep?
I think it's okay to back out.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that from a mental health perspective. I know
that's what I'm telling people, by the way. Like Nedra said, it's best for me.
That's it.
You can blame it on me. I'm fine with that. But from a mental health perspective, I say this a lot. Like, I'm fine with people quitting stuff. And I know you can't quit, but from a mental health perspective, I would rather you be mentally well than forcing yourself to do something that it seems like your spirit and energy is not aligned with at this time. And so if that means, you know, backing out of something because you really can't do it, you're already overcommitted, I think you have to back out of it, because I'm all about preventing anxiety, preventing depression. And a beautiful way to prevent stuff is sometimes to quit. We do have to quit to keep ourselves well. And I know for the people on the opposite end of that, it's like, oh my gosh, but you said this thing. And, you know, maybe this is a time where you do want to explain that at the beginning of the pandemic, as most of us, you know, may have said, like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And now that I have this freedom, I actually don't want to do all of those things anymore. I actually like where I am, and I'll stay here. And it's okay to say that.
And is there anything worse than hanging out with somebody and realizing they don't want to be there, or they just don't have it in them to be there? And on the flip side, there's something so wonderful about having a friend who does have really healthy boundaries. And you know that when they're with you, they really want to hang out with you, or they're free to say they don't have it in them, and maybe another time.
I've certainly wanted to back out of something and didn't, and end up doing it. And the entire time I'm thinking, like, when is this over? What time is it? How many more minutes do I have? Why did I do this? What, you know, just all of those questions. And it really could have been prevented by saying, hey, I know I see it that this could happen, but actually I cannot do this. Because in that moment, I was more anxious about it than I needed to be. I could have gotten out of it. So, you know, at any point, I think you can shift the boundary. Just because you've, you know, tolerated something sometimes in relationships, like sometimes we'll say, you know, well, I've had this relationship for X amount of time and it's never been an issue that my partner eats off my plate, but actually I think I don't like it anymore. You can change it and say, hey, we can't share food off the same plate. You can do that.
Can you talk a little bit about codependency? I think it's something a lot of people struggle with. A lot of other people kind of don't even know what the word means. They're probably dealing with it as well, and they're not even aware of it.
Yeah. So codependency is entangling your emotions and your life into the life of someone else's, and really being in the same space as them and rescuing them as they are going through dysfunctional behaviors.
And how do you recognize that, and also kind of, I know this is probably a huge issue and probably like a years of therapy, but how do you kind of get out of a codependent relationship?
How do you solve world hunger?
Yeah.
So boundaries, really, because that's what codependency isn't. It's like we're together all the time. Whatever happens to you happens to me. If you can't get to school today, I feel like I have to do something about it. I have to leave what I have to rescue you from this situation. And it's really unhealthy, because the person who is benefiting the most doesn't have to really do anything, because they have this built-in person to rescue them. And the person who's always rescuing is depleted, because they don't have anyone to be there for them, because the codependent person typically can't do it. And so it's like this cycle of, I can help you, you really can't help me. Maybe the way you're helping me is making me feel needed. And so there are so many things within codependency that boundaries can really assist with, that, you know, we can help people, but we have to figure out what's actually helpful and what's actually harmful to them and what's prolonging unhealthy behavior.
That might relate to my next question. So you're obviously a mental health professional, but for a regular person who might be in a relationship with someone who's not good at establishing boundaries. Is there a way for you to help, not you, but is there a way for the person in that relationship to help their partner establish healthier boundaries? And it could be perfectly fine within the relationship, but I mean, like, let's say you're dating someone and they have very poor boundaries with their parents. And their parents, you know, tell them what to do. And there's all of this sort of turmoil that ends up obviously spilling into your relationship. How can you help another person? Or is it possible to help another person to establish those boundaries? Or is that something that that person needs to have the motivation to solve themselves?
This is always tough because I get so many questions about mother-in-laws. And so, you know, you can have boundaries with your partner. And some of those boundaries could be around how they engage with their family and you. So you can say, you know, I recognize there are some challenges that you have with your family and it seems to impact your mood. I think it would be healthy for you to speak to a therapist to work through those things with your family. So your boundary could be you need to go to therapy for this relationship with us to be healthy and we're not always entangled with your family issues. Sometimes you can set boundaries with the in-laws. You can do that with your partner's family. The challenge with relationships is, you know, family relationships, your partner have had these relationships for years before you were in their life. And they may have certain roles in the family that they cannot see, but you walking into it, you're like, oh my gosh, what is this going on here? But they may not see that because they're so in it. So if you really want to help them, first understand that it's not going to be easy for them to get out of this system, even if it's unhealthy. Two, be gentle with them and be patient. Three, be delicate in what you say and how you say it. And four, don't be the therapist. And that's why I recommend sending them some referrals or suggesting some places for them to go to talk through the family stuff, because you don't want to become the person who's managing the family issues, because your partner will start to see you as, oh, you don't like my family. Oh, you want me to do the, and it's like, no, I see that your sister is really taking advantage of you, and that's hard to watch. And so to protect your relationship, sometimes calling in that expert, and that could be with finance. I suggest, you know, if you're having financial issues, call an accountant. Don't work that out with your partner. Like, you don't want to create more of an issue. Call an expert.
Sometimes even just pointing the stuff out can be so potent, you know, saying to somebody, wow, you really get mad when your mom calls at 11 p.m., even though you keep asking her not to call. Like, that's such a... It's such a simple thing, but it can really resonate, I think, sometimes. Jordan. And so one of the points you make in the book that I think is really valuable is that sometimes setting boundaries doesn't feel good. I think some of us feel like I'm going to set boundaries and I'm going to cure everything and everything's going to be better. So my not feeling great about setting this boundary means something's wrong. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Discomfort is a part of the process. And I think we feel like I'm not good at boundaries unless I can do it and not feel anything. And we are humans and we still feel bad for other people because we know how the boundary might impact them. We know that they may be sad by this thing. And so discomfort may be a part of our process. It doesn't mean that you should stop and not set a boundary, but just know that when you're doing something, you might feel a little guilty. You might feel a little sad or remorse. It doesn't mean that you're doing a bad thing.
Is something a boundary problem if you don't mind it? You know, like if I imagine there's, you know, people who might feel resentment or might feel the sense of obligation, but don't realize that they feel that resentment or that sense of obligation. I guess it's almost maybe impossible to recognize that if you don't know it at the time. But do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I would say no. It's kind of like kids sleeping in the bed. Some parents don't mind it and some do. They have a very clear boundary of kids cannot sleep in the bed. And other people are like, I don't really care. So I don't think it's like a universal rule or practice. If it doesn't bother you, then it's not your boundary. Like all of our boundaries can be different. And that's why I think in relationships, people may have boundaries with you that you don't necessarily have with them because it's not things that you particularly care about. And that's okay.
Nedra, thank you so much. This has really been great.
Absolutely amazing. Thanks for taking the time with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now it's time for our upgrade of the week, where we talk about that one thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Alice, what is your upgrade this week?
So, Jordan, as you know, I had eye surgery, I guess it was like a month ago now. I had to get retinal surgery, and part of that surgery, the surgery itself was kind of no big deal, but the recovery involved, as you know, because I complained endlessly about it, I had to be face down. Pretending.
Which is very worthy of complaint.
It was, if any time I could really indulge in some complaining, it was that.
Yeah.
It was that period of time.
Yeah, you earned it.
But I found myself afterward being, I mean, the day that I could put my head up was like Christmas times a million.
The sun shone in from the window. You could stand vertically.
I could stand. I could just put my head up and not have to stare at the ground all the time and wonder who's around me. I mean, it was transformative. And then I had a problem with my vision. Then my vision got better. And that also made me kind of feel like, again, like Christmas morning. And I guess it's made me kind of rethink gratitude in a way. And I think this is something that we've all experienced, right? Like you had the flu or a bad sickness and then like had that lifted from you. You're like, I'm alive. So I've been kind of experiencing this every day where I've got a gas bubble that's in my eye still. So I can still see it, but it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So every day it's like a little bit less of a burden, a little bit less of a burden. And I'm kind of trying to figure out, I guess it's not so much of an upgrade as like a proposed upgrade for the future, is trying to figure out how to carry this forward into my life. This feeling of like, that I'm grateful for things I didn't even know I could be grateful for. Like I can see your face, you know, not through a weird mirror, or I can just watch TV, or I can lean back. I'm not able to lie on my back for I think another month. So the day comes when I can do that. That's going to be exciting.
You're trying to like capture that feeling of not taking things for granted.
So I am starting to kind of journal out like some of these things, like things you just don't think about at all. And without being too corny, like I'm grateful for you, Jordan, and I'm grateful for
thank you Alice
just in time.
Likewise.
For it to be over. That's my upgrade. I'm grateful for seeing things.
That's such a good one. I've wanted for a long time to keep a more consistent gratitude journal, like doing that happiness practice where you write down three things that you're grateful for that day. And it just sort of trains your mind into looking for things. You start to, you know, when I did do it, I didn't keep it up for very long. I did it for, you know, maybe 10 to 15 days before I fell off the wagon and never recovered. But you really do start to, in your day, look for those things that you're going to write down later. And it does sort of train you to look for things to be grateful about, even if it's small things. You know, studies have shown how much that supports an individual's happiness. And anecdotally, I can confirm that that's the case. So I should probably get back into doing the same type of thing that you're trying.
My problem was I always did it in the morning. So I was always like, I'm grateful for coffee and my bed and the ability to go back to sleep. And then I would go back to sleep.
Same thing every day.
Just every day. Just all I could think about. Jordan, what's your upgrade this week?
My upgrade this week comes courtesy of our food writer, Claire Lower, who told me when I was asking her about where to store certain fruits and vegetables, I told her how I currently do it, which is to just put them all in the same fruit basket. And she was like, Jordan, that's chemical warfare. Apparently, you should separate certain things that will emit gases that will ripen other fruits and vegetables faster. So, for example, for people who didn't know this, I just learned this recently. You shouldn't keep your onions and potatoes in the same place because the onions will make the potatoes spud a whole lot faster than they otherwise would. And this was revolutionary to me because I would keep, I showed her a picture of my fruit basket and she's like, wait, there's onions, there's potatoes, there's oranges, there's an avocado in there, there's bananas.
No.
Like everything was just all, you know, clustered together. And she's like, no, this is, that's a disaster. So my upgrade is to separate your fruits and vegetables to the extent that you can, if you have the space for it, because all of the gases are different depending on fruits and vegetables you have, and certain ones mix well with others, and certain ones will cause other things to ripen faster. So if you have a good understanding of which ones cause your produce to ripen too fast, then you can mitigate that problem and end up with potatoes that aren't spudding crazy fast, or bananas that don't go rotten after a day or two, or avocados that don't turn brown, you know, two days after you buy them.
It's kind of something that we should learn, like, right off the bat. Like, you graduate from college and they should say, like, here's what to do with your produce. And none of us learn it until it's too late, right?
Absolutely. That and, like, splitting a check with your friends. There's certain practical things that we just never learn in school. And at least not in my school, I definitely did not learn that. Instead, you know, I learned about Christopher Columbus sailing the blue sea or something.
Yeah, I learned a lot about Chaucer and nothing about, you know, how to prevent my toaster from setting on fire. Yeah.
I memorized Robert Frost poems.
Like a fool.
Like an idiot. What is stopping through the woods on a snowy evening doing for me today, Alice?
What is it doing for my rotting avocados?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a review too. Actually, to hell with that. Don't leave a review. Just leave Alice a kind note. I will read that on air. I will read that to Alice before she goes to bed at night. Just say nice things about Alice on the internet so that I can read them and we can all miss her together. You can also reach us by calling at 347-687-8109 and leaving us a voicemail. Or you can write those love notes to Alice at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. You can also, by the way, find me on Twitter at finslippy. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show. So now, Jordan, apparently I've got to do a more formal goodbye.
You gotta do this. Mostly for me, because I don't want this to end. Our listeners don't want this to end. So I'm just going to try to keep you on this call for as long as possible.
Goodbye forever.
Goodbye forever.
I'll still be around.
What's a good goodbye song? There's like Goodbye to You by Michelle Branch.
Yes, but you know, my favorite song.
Oh, tell me.
Which I mentioned now for legal purposes is Vitamin C. Graduation.
Friends forever.
Friends forever. Of course.
Friends forever. Oh,
God.
That's a classic.
What could better sum up my time here than Vitamin C?
Man, what do you reflect on when you think of your time on The Upgrade?
Friendship.
Wait. Friendship, of course. Of course.
Friendship and learning.
The time that you spent with Melissa and I.
Yep.
And a rotating team of guests.
Those rotating guests.
Just
my favorite guests, my least favorite guests. We're not gonna name those.
Nobody needs to know names. They know.
I don't think that we've had any real duds.
Nothing but A+ guests.
Yeah.
We've definitely been fortunate. And thinking of countless upgrades of the week, you don't have to think of an upgrade of the week every week. What are you going to do with all that knowledge?
I'm just gonna let the upgrades I've already done marinate in my life and continue to improve myself.
You at least have to post them on Twitter.
I don't know.
That's where people can find the upgrades of the week.
Mm-hmm. I'll post them on Twitter.
You'll have to put them on Twitter now.
Okay. I'll do it.
Thanks, Alice.
Everyone. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Michaela. I'll miss you guys.
And I'm sure our listeners will miss you too.
So, Alice, we took a field trip this episode.
We sure did. Michaela finally let us out of our cold, dark studio. Still trying to break every single rule.
I've got a very small upgrade, but as I said in the introduction, these are tiny things that are making a big difference in our lives.
Hmm.
So for me, it has been a reframing technique that I've been using on myself. Instead of thinking, I have to do something, I think I get to do that thing.
Give us an example.
Like, I have to go to the gym. I get to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go to work. I get to go to work.
Well,
I have to go to sleep. I get to go to sleep. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Jordan. Oh, Jordan.
What are the main fears people come to you with?
Well, we're cardiologists, so the number one thing we deal with is chest pain.
Mm-hmm.
And we go through this routine with every patient we see to help them figure out mm-hmm. whether it's from their heart or from something else.
Gas.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Muscle. You know, a stomach ulcer, a pulled muscle, a blood clot in their lungs, you know, a tear in the aorta, which is the big blood vessel coming out of the heart. You know,
that's not good, right?
There's
that's
lots
bad.
Of things that are possible causes.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just wanted to find out who's better, and I think
we're always again, just trying to figure this out.
We're trying to figure it out constantly. I think we know the answer. It's
well,
Jordan.
I think you guys
the
work really well.
The constant struggle
off of each
to be as good as Alice. It's hard. Just pushes me every day.
We inspire each other to excel.
That's wonderful.
Jordan, I have a question for you. Hey, Jordan. Hey, Jordan.
I'm here for you.
I have a question for you. Very natural. It was brilliant. I nailed it.